You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Are you that person who has everything? The coolest merch and those must-have fan threads? Well, over at our Anfield Index shop, we've gone that extra mile when it comes to pimping up your Liverpool collection. From our popular range of bespoke design t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies and hats, to our signature edition mugs, prints and coasters, all provided with fast worldwide shipping. We have something for every red. We also stock official LFC merchandise and are licensed with the Premier League and UEFA to sell official iron-on shirt badges and sleeve patches. As a listener to this podcast, you can get 10% off everything with coupon code AIPRO10. Just head over to anfieldindex.shop or find us on Etsy by searching for Anfield Index.
Well, we've reached the tail end of an international break, and what better way to do it than actually resuscitating an infrequent podcast of the Anfield Index lineup, the US Pod. I'm Justin Wells, your host, and joining me today is Kev Hegarty, a returning champion, Scott Chandler, a voice that's not going to be too unfamiliar to some of you guys on this pod, and we're handing it a debut to another person from New Jersey, Mr. Lubo Murkov. So I'm going to start the evening off by saying hello to all you gentlemen, and I'm going to throw an icebreaker question out there to break the ice. It's an icebreaker question. When it comes to a player from Liverpool's past that you want to see dropped into another team in the Premier League today, solely for banter reasons, who would you pick? Lubo, you get thrown off the deep end here first, as it's your first appearance on the US pod.
So this would be a Liverpool, former Liverpool player that needs to be dropped into a Premier League today.
Yeah, but solely for banter.
Solely for banter. I think it would have to be, who is that goalkeeper that we had that was the backup to Mignolet, who was really terrible at Man United?
What Brad Jones. His name?
Brad Jones. Yes, Brad Jones, the goalkeeper for Man United.
That, I mean, but where would you put him?
I would put him at goalkeeper for Man United right now. I think that would be just great because, unfortunately, De Gea is having a good season again. And is literally saving their bacon. And I want to see a really terrible goalkeeper who basically magnifies their horrific defense, especially now that they're missing Maguire and what's the other name? Varane. So I would love to have Brad Jones as a goalkeeper for Man United for the whole season.
That's a fun one. Scott, over to you.
Well, I'm also going to curse our beloved rivals to the East, Manchester United. I'm going to give them Martin Skrtel, the Slovakian Phil Jones. They would be very familiar with his slapstick antics, and it would just be nice to give them a little bit of a chaos agent when they're at their most vulnerable right now, because without Maguire and without Varane, I'm sure they're going to be totally chill about missing center backs, because that's not a big deal, right? Just like they told us last year.
No, missing center backs is not a big deal at all. And then I guess, Kev, over to you. Who would you drop in for banter reasons?
Well, I mean, as we're being so generous to Manchester United, I think we could drop in Dundee's own, currently still playing, apparently. I didn't know because I just Googled right now. Charlie Adam, I would like to drop into Manchester United's midfield just because that signing was one of the worst we have ever made.
Oh, yeah. My God. Can you imagine Brad Jones Martin Skrtel and Charlie Adam in a Man United starting lineup?
I'm shocked.
He's got a good ring to it. He's got a great ring to it.
Maybe there's still a chance.
I mean, Charlie Adam might not be worse as a six than anything they're fielding now, so we might not see much of a difference.
I don't know. He can't really move side to side. Like, part of, you know, part of the role of the six is being able to get sideline to sideline, but he can't do that. He wasn't able to do that in his prime, but, you know, he's that's not a guy where athleticism was the first thing that screamed out for him as a player. For me, I'm actually going to go in a different manner. I am going to curse a team from Manchester, but it is the other one, and I would give them the Robbie Keane that we had from August of 2008 to December of 2008. Right? They need a striker.
Right. Not the Robbie Keane for the years before that.
Not the Robbie Keane for the years before that or the years after that. Just the Robbie Keane of that 6 months who really, I mean, look, I don't think Rafa wanted him. I don't think that he was a good fit for what we were trying to do. I don't think getting a second striker was what Rafa et al. Wanted. I think he probably wanted more pace on the wing because we were playing with Dirk Kuyt and Albert Riera quite as our width. And those two, you know, decent players, one better than the other, because I actually really love Dirk Kuyt, and I think Albert Riera was, you know, he wasn't terrible. He wasn't great. He was a serviceable Premier League winger of the era. But I really think that, you know, what Rafa wanted was someone like Ryan Babel who could actually work out. Like, I'm also still crushed that Ryan Babel didn't work out. The other thing I was considering was dropping Andre Voren in literally anywhere. But,
so I remember when I had no idea who he was. And then I was actually in Liverpool when he signed, or just after he signed. And there was a preseason match and he just like spanked one in. And I remember my cousin was like, I don't even know who this guy is. I was like, well, if he does that all season, I'll be happy. And then he just didn't do anything all season. That guy. I wonder what he got up to after us.
I don't think much. But I think
we could have...
Go ahead, Scott.
I was going to say, I think we could have picked anybody that Roy Hodgson signed, and that would have been just terrible for any team in the Premier League. Even Watford wouldn't want some of Roy's signings.
Yeah, but that was just our banter era anyway. Because if you think about it, like Paul Konchesky, Milan Jovanovic, you know, Christian Poulsen, those guys aren't, you know, those aren't Champions League players. They're not even Europa League players. Like, that's why when Roy was sacked, we were, you know, close to the relegation zone. He just didn't have an eye for the kind of player that we needed. And didn't, you know, really just, he was never a fit for a manager of a side of our, you know, abilities, if you will. But I want to move on to something a bit more optimistic than talking about Liverpool's banter era or wishing a banter era upon other teams. Because whenever we do that, it ends up backfiring, right? And they, you know, United end up finishing second or Arsenal climb the table from like, you know, 18th to 7th. But I do want to talk about someone good. I want to talk about Mohamed Salah. And I think there's a lot of shouts right now for him being the best player in the world at the moment. You know, you're always going to have your messy partisans. I don't think that Ronaldo is looked at as the best player in the world by anybody who's not, you know, wearing the most red glasses possible. And by red, I mean the other red. But I want to get a feeling from you guys. Is Leo Messi rivaled by Mo Salah at this moment? Is it anybody else that really actually might be the best player in the world at the moment as well? Luba, I'm going to go to you with this one first, but you know, everybody just drop in and chime in as you see fit.
So I was looking at, I mean, Mo is obviously phenomenal. He's had a great start to the season. I am on FPRef right now, and I just sorted very quickly the big five leagues, non-penalty XG plus XA per 90. And number one is Robert Lewandowski. And I think it's a little bit crazy because there's been a lot of attention to obviously to Mo, to what Messi is doing at PSG, which is honestly not a lot. But it's actually, and even Haaland, his hot start and all of the video, and I'm trying to figure out the video that was posted today, whether it's real or whether it's fake, and I can't figure it out. But Lewandowski has 1.36 non-penalty XG plus XA per 90. And it's just ridiculous how good he is. And ironically, maybe a small sample, second place is that guy Danjuma, who was briefly linked with Liverpool this summer and went to Spain to Villarreal, and he's second with 1.16. So, I mean, Salah is phenomenal. Is he the best player in Europe right now? I think he's in the top three. I think you have to put him there. I would still put Lewandowski, and I would still consider take your pick one of Haaland or Mbappe, even though they're not necessarily. They've had injuries and they've had some cold stretches, but I would still take a pick of the young striker who is there. I don't think that Messi has really had a great start to the season at PSG, so I will not put him there yet. But I would say Mo is one of the top three players in Europe right now.
And Scott, let's go over to you. What do you think?
Well, I think just based on form, I think Lubo hit it on the head. Messi is still transitioning to a new league at this exact moment in time. Absolutely. If I have to win a game right now, I'm taking Mo. I mean, he's clearly in form between the two players. Messi's career, you know, speaks for itself. The guy is arguably the GOAT. I mean, he's certainly the conversation starts with him. And in recent times, I mean, look what he did over the summer. I mean, he went to the Copa and just roasted everybody. You know, to quote the great Joe Bluth, you know, he went down the old South America way, maybe to Portugal, and just took care of business and deservedly won his first major trophy. So, I mean, we know the guy still has it in his locker, but he's into the back nine, maybe even the twilight. So whereas Mo is, this is probably the peak of his powers. A couple of years from now, Mo might start, you know, being trending on the downward curve, but this is his moment. He's been there kind of consistently for 3-4 years. Some of our other front three has ebbed and flows, but Mo has not. So when you look at the best in Europe, yeah, I mean, it probably starts with Lua for what he's done over the past year and a half. There was no Ballon d'Or last year. He'll probably get it this year as kind of a, you know, 2-year period. If you need a goal, you're probably still taking Lua, but it's just what Mo Salah is doing right now. He's incandescent. What he did to City, that goal he scored, I mean, it's amazing how he scored that similar goal repeatedly, you know, against Spurs and other times. There was a video out after that match where it was the split screen where he did it almost 4 times to Watford and another team. So, I mean, he's absolutely thrilling. And yeah, I take him over Messi right now. But, I mean, if a month from now Messi's banging in 30-yard free kicks and is just tearing hearts out in France, I don't know, you'd be a fool to doubt it.
And Kev, what do you think?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, the guys kind of wrapped it up pretty nicely. I think, in my opinion, on current form, so if I'm just talking 21-22 season now, so the past couple of months here, he probably is the best out of everyone. I agree that I think Lewandowski will get the Ballon d'Or because he probably deserved it last year, and he's just hasn't stopped since, and he seems very angry that he didn't get to get it, so he'll probably end up with that. If you need a goal, if that's all you need, then yeah, Lewandowski for sure. I mean, think about who else is usually on the question, right? As the guys were saying, so it's either Messi. I'd say Messi hasn't really done anything in the beginning of the season, so he's kind of out of the conversation, to be honest, for at least this season for now. You know, Lewandowski, like you said, Haaland, yeah, definitely. I hate to say I'm a De Bruyne fan, but I am. You know, he's one of the best midfielders out there. It's Mo, and, you know, who's left? Mbappe. I don't think Ronaldo or Cristiano's kind of benefited by going to United and that Messi's having a downturn, but I don't think he's in the conversation much anymore. But I think it was interesting what Lubo touched on about XG and XA, or non-penalty XG, XA, and that those stats are, yeah, they're going to favor probably Lua for sure. But you Haaland's up there just for the amount of goals that he scores. And the guy, yeah, Villarreal, which is interesting. But if you do the rate, like if you do like a radar map, and you look at all the build-up play as well, so like XG build-up or XG chain or one of those, or even like key passes per 90 and that sort of stuff, Mo is like a circle, right? He's just good at pretty much everything. And that's the type of radar that Messi gets as well. Messi's good at everything. And he gets a circle radar. It's the same type of radar that Mbappe gets. Haaland and Lua get different radars. They're heavy on the shots, and they're heavy on the XG and to their credit, the XA as well, and actual assists, but not so much in the build-up play. Lua a bit more than Haaland, but and then, you know, De Bruyne is kind of heavy on the build-up play and not so much in the goal scoring. I just think the way these players kind of map onto that type of thing, when you talk about the best player in the world, and we've been talking about Messi for years and years and years, and to be honest, Ronaldo's been great, but Messi's been greater over the years. And it's just that type of player. It's the player that can do anything. And if we're really talking about who the best player is right now, the biggest circle is Mo out of everybody. Mbappe's close. He's kind of just underneath him. If you sort of map it all. That said, you know, Haaland scores more goals so far. Lewis scores more goals. So it depends what your marker is for saying the best player in the world. But for me, I think at the current moment, he is the best player in the world.
I mean, to me, he is too. I think one of the things that we do have to weigh into this, and especially when you start talking about Lewandowski, is you do have to look at also the level of competition between the Premier League and the Bundesliga. I do think that the level of competition really favors Mo, considering the fact that the Premier League, to an extent, never looks like it's been tougher because of the amount of parity in the league. And Mo is just torching it right now. He looks like he's a threat to score every time he touches the ball. And you can just see how afraid defenses are of him. And the fact that regardless of what you can try to do to eliminate space for him, he seems to be able to find it regardless. Even if you can keep him quiet, like City did for 45 minutes, it doesn't seem like there's any sort of foolproof plan to shut him down for 90. Right.
He owned that side in the second half.
He just finds so many ways to hurt you. I guess I want to, though, flip over to the other side of our formation and actually look at Sadio Mane, because I know, Lubo, you have some strong feelings here as well, too.
One thing before we move to Sadio.
Go for it.
I just noticed that Karim Benzema, he's having the same season that Harry Kane had last year, where he's significantly overperforming XG and XA, especially on the assists. I had no idea. He has 9 goals and 7 assists versus 3.9 XG and 3.3 XA. So I have no idea what's happening in Spain, but he's having the season that Harry Kane had last year, where he just outperformed on everything. That is Karim Benzema right now. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's been great. No reason France needed him for like half a decade, you know. Surplus to requirements.
You know, I have two things with Karim Benzema that genuinely bother me, right? One's rational and one's very irrational. Which one do you guys want first?
The rational. Always irrational.
All right, the rational one is I don't like him because of the fact that he tried to extort a teammate. The Matthew Valbuena affair really sits... Right. Very, very, very poorly in my head. I'll give you the irrational one. He looks like Shia LaBeouf.
there's even another more irrational one. Is that weren't we supposed to get him when we signed? So the rumor was the summer or the January window where we got Suarez and Andy Carroll, that we were supposed to get Suarez and Benzema. But what was the other striker for Rails? The Argentinian striker for Real that was there at the time?
Gonzalo Higuain?
Higuain blew out his knee. So Benzema stayed. And then we scrambled and ended up with Andy Carroll. So there is another, supposedly. I don't know how true that is, but that was what I heard.
Andy Carroll scored in the FA Cup against Everton.
That is true.
So, you know. It was all worth it.
Thanks, that's Andy, fun. That's just fun if you have blue nose relatives like I do. But other than that, Andy Carroll wasn't much fun.
No.
Yeah. So I think that the other thing I do want to discuss, though, is the other side of our forward formation with Sadio Mane. Because I do think that there is a lot of, and it's going to fold very nicely into our next topic as well. But there's a lot of talk that he is cooked or finished or done. And I simply just don't buy it. Is he going to be as good as he was 2 years ago? No, because I think it's really hard to be that good for that long because he was incredible. And most guys aren't able to carry over a 24% conversion rate over a long period of time when their career average is closer to 15%, right? That's just called being hot, which happens, right? You also go through being cold. Turns out luck is a really important part of being a professional athlete. But I want to get a sense from you guys whether or not you actually think, has Sadio lost a step? Is he still an extremely effective attacker? And even with a diminished step, where do you, even if you do think he has a diminished step, where do you see him as far as, you know, the kind of attacker he is? Is he still an elite level attacker that you can count on if you're going to try to win a league? Or do you think that he, you know, maybe should be relegated to a secondary role? Kevin, I'm going to start with you here.
Sure. No, I think he's been rather good this season, despite what I've read and some of what I've heard. I mean, he has a few goals, which always helps him. I think he's more confidence based than Mo is. I think Mo just assumes he's going to score kind of thing. And once Mo gets on a roll, he kind of keeps going, that type of player. But he's been rather good. Like, I'm just quickly, I mean, this is under stat. So the, I don't know how accurate it is, but there, his actually chain is just by Mo's, his goals per 90 is about, bit over half the game, pretty much. That's pretty good. Expected he has no assists, but he has some expected assists. I guess he didn't finish those for him. Actually, chain's good, as I said, just about Mo. So he's been, shots per 90 is at 374. That's good. Mo's only at 4. So yeah, he's having a good season. If I add in last season, he kind of, I mean, they both drop a bit, but he drops a bit more. I don't think he's cooked. I think maybe his peak was earlier than this, and he's just, like, he's kind of over the hump. He's still a great player. I just don't think he's elite. Like, he had a couple of elite spells and then basically one or two of them generous elite seasons. So I just think he's just like a very good player now, if that makes sense, rather than being like sort of elite when we were, you know, when we got Champions League and then the Premier League back to back pretty much. He was excellent, and now it's just and Mo is, seems to be somehow getting better, and it also makes everybody around him look a bit worse. But yeah, I think he's just very good. And if he keeps up the performances he's having right now for the rest of the season, or at least close to it, I would have no concerns whatsoever. I think there is planning to be done on the entire front, but I don't think it's just kind of focused on Sadio. Did I lose you, Justin?
You didn't. I just used the mute button. But Scott, let's go over to you.
Okay. I figured the sirens in the background were the social media police coming to get Justin for you know, touching the third rail here, talking about Sadio Mane and what people talk about him on social media. So it's a hot topic. I think, you know, this conversation, you know, Kev kind of touched on this, you know, the way Kev broke it down. The best way to do this is through nuances, which you don't get on social media. With Sadio Mane, it's not just as simple as, well, he either stinks or he doesn't. I mean, he's been with us for a while. His first season, he, you know, came in with an amazing debut, and he scores against Arsenal in a crazy win, and he carried us that season. When he got hurt late in the season, I believe it was against Everton, you know, that was a real concern, is do we have enough to get over the line and get us into the Champions League? Luckily, we did, and then we got the best player of the last 15, 20 years, other than maybe Van Dijk or Gerrard, in Mohamed Salah. So it's just hard when you compare, you have somebody who's literally on the other side that you can compare to, and Mo has just been so consistent. Well, it's really hard to be at that level. When you get to that level, you're winning player of the year, you're winning Ballon d'Ors, or in the conversation. Sadio is probably not that for a while. I mean, over the last few years, he had moments where it was like, damn, is maybe he the best one of our forwards? I mean, because he had moments where he looked like it. Last year was just clearly a down year for me, maybe the year from hell. He looked disjointed. It looked like his body was not doing what his mind perhaps wanted him to do, And then some days it would be vice versa. He looked like a baseball player who had the yips and couldn't throw from second base to first base. He was like Chuck Knobloch out there. But as we
don't
saw, it's a touch. Hey, we're making fun of the Yankees. Let's do it. But this year you can see he's getting in the right positions, whereas last year he really wasn't. I mean, although, you know, he literally had his upper leg held by a goalkeeper last year and couldn't get a penalty. But that is an entirely different subject about Liverpool not getting penalties. But, you know, he had moments where he was doing the right thing and just couldn't put it all together. This year he's getting far more closer to what we saw from 2-3 years ago than last year. He's getting in the right places. He's linking up. And yeah, he does anecdotally. I mean, that's the eye test. Anecdotally, it just seems like he is a confidence player. It seems like he is somebody who needs the crowd behind him, who needs that energy. Bobby seems like that as well. You know, empty stadiums, it wasn't for Liverpool and it wasn't for Sadio last year. Crowds are back. He looks different. He, you know, you can say rejuvenated. Maybe it was just, you know, just needed a different change of scenery from last year. But he does look better. But we're going to lose him in the spring, or not spring, but early winter to AFCON. And then he is getting on. And at some point, the magic is going to run out of the front three. This can't go on forever. So to me, I just don't think you can possibly get – you have to keep Mo as long as you can. Bobby's a little older. Sadio seems ideally, you know, if he has a bounce back season, that's the time to sell him. His value is not going to go any higher than it is right now. And his value has got to be higher than it was last year. So I think he deserves all the praise. He's a great guy. He's fun to watch, and he's certainly much more fun to watch when he's doing what he's doing right now than last year. But yeah, if PSG will give us a sack of cash and we can refresh the lineup, I mean, I think you got to consider that in the summer or beyond.
And Lubo, I'm going to give you the last word here.
So Sadio, I mean, if you are on Discord, AnfieldIndex.com Discord, you've probably seen that I have argued the case for Sadio and Bobby all through last year. And whether it was finishing, whether it was COVID, whether it was the crowds, whatever it was, I mean, even Sadio Mane had an interview where he didn't know what was going on. He got tested. He had probably saw psychologists, psychiatrists, doctors. He just didn't know what was happening, and maybe something that Scott spoke with. He just seemed a little bit like he couldn't quite figure out how his body moved. And this year, he's looked better. I mean, the numbers are better. I was just looking at Stats Bomb, FB Ref, in the total Premier League non-penalty XG plus XA. He's second in the league after Mo Salah. Now, he had a huge game against Leeds, but even then he's been present in the other games. He has contributed. I watched both of his games for Senegal over this international break. He had one goal and three assists. And when you watch Senegal, I think they played against Namibia, it was almost like a track meet. It's just a lot of just really fast players running up and down the pitch, and just Sadio still seemed just head and shoulders above everybody else there. So I think this year Sadio just looks back. Now, his underlying numbers are good. Whether he'll be able to convert those into goals and assists, hopefully he can. I'm actually very, very positive about Sadio. And I know Scott said that it didn't make sense to try to look to sell him. Maybe. I don't know if there'll be a big offer for him next year. I also suspect that when Mo hopefully signs a deal, that there may be a deal for Sadio as well for a couple of extra years, even if just to protect his value. But I'm very hopeful for Sadio. I think he's going to have a really good season. I think he just looks dedicated. He looks relaxed, rested, just fit. And he just seems to know, like, he has control over his body again. And hopefully that translates to a lot of goals for us this year.
That's what it looks like. I think that control over his body again is a good point. He looks comfortable in everything he's doing. I know, like, he was taken the other day when we played a few weeks ago, where he couldn't buy a goal. He ended up getting one eventually, but he's just in the right place at the right time. The goalkeeper was like a cat, and then the other one, I don't know what happened. Somebody got in his way or something like that. It's just, but he looks comfortable in whereas last year, I mean, everybody looked kind of off, but last year and kind of the tail end of the year before that, he just didn't look like something was a bit wrong. But like, the guy since 2016, he's been the top three player in Africa every year, every single year. He lost twice to Mo. He won one in 2019, the best player in Africa. And then his first sort of third place finish, I think he was like, I don't know if it was Aubameyang or Mahrez, is one of them, won it in 2016. The guy is excellent. And he looks, I'm not going to say he looks back to his best because he had some overperforming elite seasons, but he looks like he's going to do some business this year. And that's all we can ask. So I'm happy so far.
Yeah. And I guess I want to delve into Liverpool social media, because that's been mentioned a few times, you know, as the third rail. But we're going to do that after a short commercial break.
Enjoying this podcast? Then why not supercharge your support for the Reds with Anfield Index Pro? With around 30 premium podcasts every month, AI Pro offers the very best reviews, reaction and debate on all things LFC. From the acclaimed statistics and deep dive analytics found in our Under Pressure podcast, to the transfer links, scouting reports and fast live reaction shows we record after every match, AI Pro is home to our very best content. With regular appearances by Reds legends like Jan Molby and Sir Kenny Dalglish, plus insight from journalists, sports scientists, coaches and psychologists, we'll help bring you closer to the club you love. There's never been a better time to take AI Pro for a test drive. Available on all popular podcast platforms, with free apps for iOS and Android. You can try it absolutely free with no strings attached. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com to start your 7-day free trial now.
And we're back. What a great commercial that was.
Oh, that took forever. Guy, never book a commercial that long again.
Yeah, we got to talk to our
producer. We got to pay the bills.
That's true. We have to pay the bills.
That's why Gag has to, he's got to make the big bucks, so you got to do what you got to do. Yeah.
So he can let us idiots do this.
Yeah, this is what you get when you listen to free side programming. So one of the things that obviously always comes up invariably, because of the fact that I think that when you're talking about fan-based podcasts, one of the things that always comes up are the different forums in which fans communicate, and one of them obviously is social media. I view social media as a bit of a sewer sometimes. I think that Lubo has touched on this quite a bit, and I think that this is something that I do want to talk about through this segment, which is, it seems like the easiest way to get engagement on social media is to avoid nuance and just go directly to the negative. Lubo, I'm gonna give you the first crack at this, because this is something you've spoken about extensively on Twitter, and I want to, you know, just give you a chance to actually vocalize this, because maybe people will pick up on certain nuance, hearing it spoken rather than hearing it typed.
Yeah, I mean, I have spoken about it on Twitter and on Discord, and it seems like a lot of fans have realized, or fans, quote unquote, that the easiest way to get engagement, and if you measure engagement with likes and retweets and quote tweets or replies, is just to be constantly negative and criticize the team or the owners or certain players, and just maintain that agenda, almost as if there's the realization that what made Arsenal fan TV and maybe Goldbridge, to an extent, Mark Goldbridge, so popular, is they would just constantly complain about their team and the manager and the owners, and that made them popular. And it feels there's a few big accounts, if you will, or maybe more, because I don't follow all of them, that's what they seem to thrive on, is just that constant negativity. It's been they've been, you know, FSG wars, they've been handle wars, they've been Dan Kennett orc squad depth charts wars, they've been anything. And some of it is banter, but there's an undercurrent of just constant negativity, regardless of how well the team is doing in general and overall, is just to focus on the negativity. And it is just exhausting. And as much as, now, I personally try to filter it out and mute accounts and maybe sometimes even block accounts, it just seeps in into the Discord, discourse, and into Discord sometimes. And it is just exhausting. But maybe that's just my perspective. Maybe I'm Mr. Sunshine and it bugs me more than it should.
I'd rather take Mr. Sunshine, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, I've seen it. It's I'm actually this is like the longest period in a long time I haven't really been on social media. I kind of stepped away from Twitter after the world imploded for a while, and because it was just heavy. And then I go on Discord during match days. Usually you can find me in there if you want to, you know, yell at me or whatever for this podcast. But yeah, for the most part, from what I read, I just read things now. I never really engage anymore, but I think you're right. I mean, look, Twitter and Facebook, and I know we don't have like a Facebook group where we go and talk. I mean, there's a couple of Liverpool ones on there, but it's really for sharing and like articles and things. It's not really for, you know, talking with people. But Twitter and Facebook on a whole are just rage machines. They're just run, their algorithms are run by rage. So it works no matter what. So if you engage with somebody that's angry about something, more angry things will show up on your feed unless you adjust the settings or whatever. And even then, it'll continue to show. And the problem with football is it works the same way, as you said, is some of these larger accounts do kind of get response to this stuff, and they get clicks and they get viewers and they get followers. So they continue to do it. And it's just a perpetuating cycle. Now there are like Goldberg is funny. Like I'll give him that, but he's got a good setup there. It's funny. He was one of the early ones to do it. So I get it. I like following him. You know, and he doesn't pull punches about his own team, which is funny, but he's a United fan. What are you going to do? Not a huge fan, but there are other accounts that take it even further than he does. Cause I think he kind of knows what he is. You know, he's in on the joke a little bit, but there's some other accounts that are not like that. And they just continually do it over and over again. And it just makes the discussing football a worse place. And I think you're probably smart to mute things and block people and kind of, you know, get away from it. I've seen very few nuanced conversations about football on Twitter. When they are, it's usually like sort of the stats nerds going back and forth, you know, prominent ones, not so much like the ones that kind of like me who do it themselves kind of thing. But, and I've seen a few like good conversations in the AI Discord before on certain topics, but most of the time it's kind of the same everywhere. It's a bit more controlled in Discord, you know. there's a sort of underlying like respect in the Discord channel sometimes, where it's, you know, and this is, you know, sort of credit to Gags and the team who are kind of like, hey, like watch it or you're out kind of thing. But yeah, Twitter is terrible for this kind of talk and nuances. For most aspects of life seems to be dead, but it's certainly dying in football as well. I don't know, Scott or Justin, if you have anything to add to this, but it's kind of rough to watch because I feel it's even changed in my time on social media and being a football fan.
I think it just comes down to, it's like a lot of ways sports is a reflection of our society at large. And like you said, it just rage sells, vitriol sells, you know, people, you know, it's why you see ESPN, Fox Sports 1 in America, you get these talk shows with people just screaming at each other. I don't gravitate towards that. So it's hard for me to understand why some people do in that way, is why are you always looking to be angry? I tend to gravitate, like you said, Kev, there are some good analysts on Twitter. Grace Robertson does a phenomenal job. Sam McGuire, you know, who does a lot of stuff with Anfield Index. I want to learn. I want to understand more. It's the same way when I started to become a Liverpool supporter, I wanted to learn more about the history of the club because I come to it, you know, I enjoy it. It's a hobby and it's supposed to be, you know, a distraction. It's supposed to get you away from things, as Jurgen Klopp talks about. It's the most important of the least important things. But, you know, as we've seen the Euros this year with English supporters or what's going on with the Hungarian supporters, people just have always taken things to the nth degree. And online is no different. It's just, but I find it very strange, you know, not to date myself, but, you know, I grew up in the 90s, and that's when you started the internet age, you know, with America Online and chat rooms, and you started to understand like what can you do on here? What can you not? And I've never understood the urge to put on an anonymous account and go online and start yelling at people. I just don't know what you get out of that. You know, I think making connections with people, discussing things, you know, building a community, that's the good side of it. And that's what Anfield Index does a lot. Yeah, Discord can get a little nasty times because people just get upset. And yeah, if you looked at our WhatsApp or during a game, people get pissed in the middle of a game. But it's good to think of those things in context, because 2 minutes later, the person you've been slating will probably knock in a goal. Divock Origi does that time and again. Just when you think he's out, he pulls us back
pulls
in. He pulls you back in. And Mane's been that way too. I mean, you know, it just, you go, oh, Mo, or oh, Sadio, you know, why didn't he see the runner there? Why didn't he make that pass? Why did he make that decision? I mean, that's been Sadio for, you know, a lot of the last year. But, and so it's about what do you want out of, you know, communicating with other human beings? What are you looking for when you, you know, you turn to this, you know, you got your 9-to-5 job, or you maybe got a family of kids, or you're burning the midnight oil. A lot of jobs aren't 9-to-5. This is supposed to be a welcome distraction. And right now we're in one of the golden eras for Liverpool. I mean, we mentioned Roy Hodgson in the banter era. I mean, the little we talk about that era, the better, unless, you know, just to have a quick laugh. But, you know, these are supposed to be the good times, because sports are, you know, it's cyclical. It's not going to last forever. There's going to be lean years again. So these are the times we should be, you know, really enjoying it. But that doesn't mean you don't have to follow blindly. FSG has made a lot of missteps. They deserve it when they're, you know, to be criticized when they do wrong, but they also deserve praise. But unfortunately, yeah, I said it before, you know, we can have nuance here. We can talk like human beings, but unfortunately too many other people in other places are shouting at each other. And it's like, what do you look for? What do you want to interact with? And, you know, I would hope that most people, you know, will find that you get a lot more out of the game when you're trying to learn and connect than just get pissed about every little thing.
I liken it to a, sorry, I dropped my headset for a second. I liken it.
I was going to say, even the sighing, even just the, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's a sense of exasperation.
I liken it to
all be summed up by.
No, I mean, I liken it to the point of like constantly sticking your hand into a flame and thinking that it's not going to burn you, but it's going to burn you every single time. I think, Scott, you've gotten at something with the whole nature of sports being cyclical, and I'm gonna even one up you here, right? Look at the most successful clubs in England, or like, you know, some of the most successful sports teams in the U.S. Right? Think about you know, for instance, like I'll take an example from the NFL. The New England Patriots. They've won more Super Bowls than anybody else. 7. How many Super Bowls have been played? 55. So the most successful team is still going to not win more often than they do win, right? This is the thing in the margins that people need to understand about sports, right? You're not going to win every year. That's what makes winning special. It's what makes it not boring. And I think that treating winning like it's something you're entitled to, which I feel is what social media, for every single fan base that I'm involved with, takes for granted. Now, the teams I root for in the U.S. don't win ever, right? So I have no real idea what that feels like. The most recent team that I root for to win was the Mets when I was 5. So other than Liverpool, I have no real frame of reference for this. So I don't take it for granted, because I haven't had all the joy and success that sports can bring you, right? So I'm just going to choose to
have Liverpool in your life.
Yeah. I'm just going to choose to enjoy it.
Liverpool, yeah.
Like, I'm going to choose to enjoy it, because that to me seems like it's much more logical as a way to be and a way to exist. But I don't necessarily understand or think why you'd have to just immediately get miserable about the thing that you claim to love. Like, I think that a lot of people...
Like the red Corvette problem.
Yeah.
Because it's like you work all your whole life because you really want that red Corvette, and then eventually you get it, and then you want the red Porsche. You know what I mean? And you just get bored of it. Is that a thing in sports? I don't know. I don't think I'd ever get wind of Liverpool winning the Premier League.
My uncle waited his whole life to get the red Corvette, and by the time he got it, because he's a bigger man, his knees were just in awful shape, so getting into the car was like a constant source of pain for him.
Oh, no. That's a metaphor for life.
Yeah.
It feels like that should have been part of an Alanis Morissette song. It really feels like that was a deleted lyric.
Isn't it ironic? I don't know. Don't you think?
To me, I think sometimes when I think about, you know, the way some supporters view the game, it kind of reminds me of the one time John Oliver was on with Men in Blazers, and they were showing, you know, when the West Ham fans stormed the pitch and they were arguing, they won't give us the shit. And John Oliver said, you know, it's not really about the shirt. And it's just, I think people have some animosity, some anger, some frustration that they bring into things. And I don't know, for me, I kind of leave some of that at the door, because life can get, if you want it, life can get you down in a million ways, especially over the last year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, however long you want to go, maybe forever. But this is supposed to be a refreshing escape. And you know, you, just you said, you root for the Mets, the Jets, the Knicks. I mean, I've rooted for the Cubs. The Bears are a factory of sadness. I mean, all of us have, you root for enough teams, you're going to have some just periods of just misery. But at the same time, you try to enjoy going to the ballpark. You try to enjoy seeing cool stuff that happens on the, you know, on the pitch or on the field or the rink or the court. And it should be something that you come to in a positive way. But I think some people just can't separate that other aspect of their life from sports. And unfortunately, that's how sports work. It's just a mirror that holds up to our society and reflects it right back.
I think that's a good place to end this particular conversation on the social media piece, because I think everybody's kind of nailed bits and pieces of it. I actually, you know what, that's not, because I also do think that there's one thing about, you know, overall social media with Liverpool that does bother me. And I know I've said this in chat groups, but I am going to put this out there now. I do think that certain times people watch games with their agendas rather than their eyes. And I think that taking a step back and just, you know, not having to have your, you know, what you think is happening happen all the time. And sometimes just the admission that, you know, a player who you don't think is as good can have a good game and be instrumental to us winning is a thing that can happen. And it has happened many times in the past. So I do wish that people would be sometimes a bit more open to, understanding that not every single game is going to unfold in the exact way you think it will.
Actually, one thing that also I can never really understand is people tweeting or posting on Discord or other forums while the game is going on. I just never do that. I can't focus when the game is going on. As Kaz was mentioning, that's it. That's all I want to do. I want to watch. I don't want to follow Twitter. I don't want to post messages. I don't want to post instant reactions. And sometimes at halftime, I would just maybe just log in quickly just to see what people are posting. And it's just, it's insane. I mean, how can you watch a game and post literally every minute? It's just impossible. How can you even just, one is watch the game, but also enjoy and understand the game? It's crazy. But anyway, I'm not going to criticize people who do it. I don't know how people do it. I don't know how you could do it and actually carefully watch the game, but it's something that is quite prominent on social media as well.
Oh no, I don't understand either, because taking your eyes off the game for a second is really hard for me. It's very hard for me. I want to watch what's going on, like responding to a text message, especially also, by the way, I can't look at social media at all if a game is played streaming, because everybody's watching at different points in time and moments. So
that's terrible. Never go on Discord if you're streaming or whatever. You're gonna find Gags somehow gets goal alert. Like, he can see a goal like 10 minutes before it happens.
I think he's got a feed from Michael Edwards straight to him.
Yeah,
because we're watching the game on Dan Peacock, we are way behind over here.
I mean, I watch it. I
can't go on Discord. If he has like two solo cups and a string from his house to the stadium, but he always knows way before anybody else.
I mean, I watch every game on a stream because I don't have cable. I watch off of all of my TV is off of the internet. So right. I'm behind on literally everything by about 2 or 3 minutes up to 2 or 3 minutes. So I choose to, not engage on social media during games. I'll talk to you all you want about it afterwards, but it's just, and look, I watch most of my games. I watch most of the games that I watch at a bar, right? I want to actually talk to the people I'm watching the game with instead of having my head buried into my phone, right? It's just not how I want to engage in watching a game. To me, watching most games is a communal thing. And right, I'm not saying that engaging in social media.
I use Discord as a proxy for that.
Yeah, I'm not saying
I use texting and WhatsApp.
I'm not saying that that's not a surrogate for that, especially in the years, in the years after, while a pandemic is still very much here. Maybe it's not necessarily sometimes the safest thing to have to be, constantly communing with people, right? But at the same time, I just can't do it.
It's whatever you're comfortable with. I mean, for me, I think the thing I missed most about going to college was sitting in a room with people watching sports, just making jokes, making comments, you know, maybe people make observations. And so that's kind of what texting and WhatsApp is, but that's what going to the bar is. That's
college. I don't even watch baseball at all now. Baseball was on all day at college. Thanks, Brent, if you're listening.
Shout out to Brent. Hope Brent is enjoying 4-hour baseball. Shout out to Mando. His Dodgers are still hanging tough. Go Dodgers. But yeah, I think that's it's just whatever you feel most comfortable. Some people can look at the phone, but you know, if you take your eyes off the screen, yeah, you might miss something. But occasionally texting, WhatsApp, even Twitter, you know, help, you know, why did some guy get hurt? Or you get some news that way. It's just it's about the communal experience. And certainly going to a bar, I mean, there's an electricity and an atmosphere of being with that group of people that is nice. But I agree with you, Justin, just to circle back to what your last point on social media was. I think we've all become pundits in a way, and certainly it's ironic, again, Alanis Morissette, that we're here, we're kind of doing punditry, you know, fan punditry, but I think that's the way, you know, diehard supporters have become. Everybody's a pundit, you want to have opinions, and, you know, when you become a pundit, you find you're rooting for your opinions more than anything else, and I'm happy to be wrong. I mean, I might thought Adam Lallana sucked, but when he scored a goal, great. Same thing with Divock, or, you know, when Hendo's having a tough game, or you know, I think, hey, maybe he's not suited for this, maybe not suited for that. But I mean, at the end of the day, he's still a pretty great human being who does a lot on and off the pitch. You're talking about Hendo, and he also has some big moments too. Yeah, so there's good and bad. But I think, again, when you let the negativity and when you let, like you said, your own agenda lead instead of just, you know, looking and seeing, you know, I'm happy to be proven wrong as long as it's a positive way. You know, as long as Liverpool are playing well, great. Prove me wrong every day.
Yeah, see, for me, it's just the agenda part. Like, you know, I'm not trying to, like, take a shot at anybody when I say this, but it's more to the point of I think that Twitter, to an entire generation of sports fans in all sports across everywhere, has convinced people that they can do one of two things. Either A, that they're a better pundit than the people they see on TV, or B, they could do a better job coaching or general managing than the general managers and coaches of their teams. Like, I think that has been, as far as sports social media, one of the bigger outcomes of it. And I got to say, I'm not really here for it. Like, I don't like that. I just want, like, personally, I just want to watch the games and enjoy them for, you know, the 90 minutes that they are. Because that's, I think I only want to live 90 minutes at a time with Liverpool. I think that's probably the healthiest way for me to approach it. I'm not trying to tell anybody else how to do things, but that's just the way in which I can approach it to keep my sanity. But I want to move on then away from this topic, because I think we've covered it well too. You know, let's go through the next six games for Liverpool, which are going to be some, you know, there's some big ones there. It starts with Watford, with the UK's ridiculous quarantine rules about having it so that Big Quvine is going to be our keeper instead of Big Ali. Fabinho will not be there. So Liverpool is going to be a unit that's going to be, you know, a lot of changes since the last time they played, albeit the last time they played was almost 2 weeks ago. Then going directly back into the Champions League to Madrid, to the Wanda Metropolitano, the site of our sixth European Cup win, at a place that we've actually played at since, where we had a very lackluster game against Atletico, where Simeone just seemed to have our number. And then over to Manchester, and then over to Old Trafford to play a Manchester United team that is going to be lacking a few defenders, as we've mentioned earlier. So across those three games, let's start there. How do you guys think we were in a fare? Kev, let's start there.
6 points and a draw. I think Watford's going to be a weird lineup and everybody's going to lose their shit, but it's going to be the only lineup we can put out. So calm down, everybody.
Lads, it's Watford.
Yeah. Watford, although, you know, we kind of have bad memories of them for one reason or another. They are crap. They're awful.
Crap.
So as long as the front three is there and the back four, you know, I get people are talking about Trent starting. I assume he may start. He trained but I don't know if he'll start. But if he starts, I mean, if the back four is fine, you know, it'll be VVD and Matip, and Robbo paid a lot for Scotland as always, but you know, he's kind of a tank, so he'll start, and hopefully Trent, and then you have the three up front, whatever the midfield is. Sure, like Hendo will be at the six probably, and then the two around him, Curtis and one more.
It's going to be Curtis and then one of probably Jamie. Ox, Milner, or Keita.
I want it to be Keita. I'd be worried. I'm like worried about him like early on getting an injury and then being done for like six games. And I just need him to be okay. And obviously he went away internationally and played every minute because he's the best player in the country. So yeah, that's fine. Atletico, Simeone, Atletico is not that good. They weren't that good last year. They weren't that good the year before that. But it's Simeone. He just kind of knows how to win games. And I don't want to say he has our number, but we, you know, he sets up well against teams that play like we do. That said, we are a better team than them. So I just expect it to be like kind of like a bit of a bruising battle and maybe a scoring draw, which I'd take away, I guess. And then United away. United are not as good as they pretend to be. They're also probably without Maguire and Varane, right? So that's interesting. So you just got to worry about, you know, their 14 million attackers because they don't have much of a midfield. I think we'll be fine. I mean, it's Old Trafford, so we're like, you know, are we any good there recently? Yeah, a little bit, but not historically. So, I mean, as I said, 6 points in a draw feels like it, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's 4 points in a draw, but no worse than that.
So then, Lubo, after we go to United, it's Preston in the League Cup, Brighton, and then the return leg against Atletico. Right, so we're split across three competitions there. What do you want to see happen? First off, what do you want to actually see happen in the League Cup?
Well, I've already said that we're winning to the quadruple, so we're definitely going all the way, right? But no, I mean, listen, we have an easy draw. I think one of the challenges or one of the problems that Klopp has had in the domestic cups is that we always had Premier League teams a lot of times away very early in the draws. And so we're always getting knocked out. And that we had that year where we got pretty far and then we had to go to Qatar for the World Cup. And then we had to play the under 15s at Aston Villa. But I mean, we have Preston North End away. We have actually fairly deep squad right now. Not a lot of injuries. Hopefully, if we get Thiago and back as well, we'll have the squad to beat Preston. Even if you know another start for Taki and Divi. So I would like. I mean, unless we end up in the next round, we get Man City at the Etihad and whatever. But as long as we can stay in the competition, I don't mind trying to win it. It's, you know, in Klopp's first season, we got to the final and lost on penalty kicks to Man City. So to me, I think Preston would be a good opportunity to give, again, Kate Gordon and Divi and Taki a few minutes and should be good enough to win. And what's interesting then, that is going to be the last. We have four games away, Watford, Atletico, Man United and Preston, all four games away. So the next four games are all away from Anfield. But then after that, Brighton through Everton on the 30th of November, we have seven games, if I count correctly, and six of them are in Liverpool. Obviously, the Everton game is away, but that's just across the park. So the only game after we come back from Preston to Preston, we have Brighton, Atletico, Arsenal, Porto, Southampton, and Everton, all at home, well, technically in Liverpool. The only away is West Ham before the next international break. So I think if we can navigate these four away fixtures, including that the League Cup, and what Kev said, I would take, depending on, you know, two wins and a draw. If the two wins are in the league at Watford and Man United and the draw is at Atletico, I think that'd be spectacular. And then I'm pretty confident that at Preston, regardless of who would field, in the Seb Vandenberg, trophy competition, will win, and that should get us in a pretty good shape. Then for the last three games before the break, which is Brighton home, Atletico at home, and then West Ham away. And these seven games, I think four in the league, two in the Champions League, one in the League Cup, it's really going to, I think by the time we finish the West Ham game, it's really going to tell us where we really are in the league, because Man City have a pretty easy draw. Chelsea have a up and down draw, but Chelsea are basically playing all in London. And Man United have a very difficult draw. Brighton have a pretty difficult draw. So I think the table will shake itself out quite quickly. And Chelsea and Man City will continue to win. So we have to be able to stay with them. And after the West Ham game, we need to be up there either, first, second, third, but within a couple of points of first place. Otherwise, it could become very difficult very quickly.
All right. And then, Scott, after we get through Preston, Brighton, and Atletico, we have two games before the next international break. West Ham away, Arsenal at home, right? It's actually West Ham, and then there's an international break. Sorry, I couldn't read the fixture list, right? So we get to the end of that with a pretty critical fixture in the league, West Ham being one of the tougher sides over past seasons. Do you think that, again, looking at our league fixtures between now and then of Watford, United, Brighton, and West Ham, how many of those 12 points are we going to pick up?
I mean, I think we should pick up most of them. I mean, look, like I said, early kickoff versus Watford, for whatever reason, it just feels like early in the morning. I'm still waking up over here, silly o'clock here in America. Maybe they're still waking up over there. It just feels like that it's always kind of a weirder match than it has to be, but then it ends up being 3-1, 4-2. It's something weird that eventually the goals get in. And Brighton has been good, no question about Graham Potter, but that's a match you would expect to win. And sure, Atletico will be annoying, and that'll take some energy, but this is the perfect time to play United. And Old Trafford can be a house of horrors for us, but we saw what we can do there last season, and I think they're going to be more nervous to play us than we are of them. And congrats to David Moyes and all everything he's done, but he's still very much David Moyes. And I think we've shown that again. We've been great against West Ham in recent seasons. We had that one year where they knocked us out of the FA Cup and we struggled. And obviously there was that weird result at the end of the Rodgers era. But I mean, otherwise we kind of handled our business, home and away versus them, and Arsenal are just ours. And LOL in all capital letters. So I don't know if we should, really be too afraid of anything we have coming. I think it's going to be more about us than them, which is kind of how I feel about this race in general. If we can get lucky with a little bit of health, a little bit of form, maybe we'll get something out of Naby. Maybe we'll get Thiago back. Trent has got to stay in the lineup. I mean, if we can't keep Trent in the lineup, eventually Milner at right back just ain't going to work. We saw that against City. It can work for a little bit. Sure, he looked great in the Champions League. I mean, Milner is the point god in the Champions League dealing out assists, but when the rubber meets the road against real pace, it's not going to work, and the team is so far away from its peak when Trent isn't in the lineup. So I think it's going to be about us, and you just never know the way it's going to go. Maybe you'll lose five center backs, maybe you'll lose two wingers, maybe you'll lose both fullbacks. You just have no idea with this team. And we just don't have the depth that City and Chelsea do, where we can lose bodies like that. That's the difference when, you're not funded by an oligarch or, the sovereign wealth of a state. We have to live within our means, but when we're at our top level, we've seen what we can do. So I feel pretty good. I feel pretty good that we can do this, but there's just a lot of ifs and unknowns. And I mean, looking ahead more than 2 weeks seems kind of crazy, because Lord only knows what will happen over this time. But it'd be great to get off and start with a win, because just things snowball on us and things can get out of hand quickly. We've had those months a few years ago. We had a bad November. It seems like we always have an icky January and February, aside from the title winning season. So if we can avoid those stretches and make hay while we can, we'll be in good shape for when the fixtures come thick and fast late November into December.
All right, and go ahead, Luba.
Well, just one comment on United and then West Ham specifically is that we get more time to rest after a European fixture. So we play Atletico on Tuesday. I think Man United play on Wednesday. I think it's Atalanta. I don't know if it's home or away. And then when we go to West Ham, it's on Sunday. They actually have a away game in the Europa League that Thursday night. So they're going to have Thursday night Europa League, and then Sunday against Liverpool. We play Wednesday. So I do think the fixture works out decently well for us to get more days rest for those away, tough away games against at Man United, at West Ham. I just feel that if we can stay healthy and Klopp does his thing where he rotates and keeps the team engaged, we should be able to. I mean, famous Lubo last words, we should be able to go to Old Trafford and the what's called the Olympic Stadium or whatever it's called now and just come back with 6 points.
Lubo, I love what you said there. You referenced United being in the Europa League several times. I hate to disagree with you. That's where I think they belong and hopefully where they'll end up, but technically, this time of year, it is in the Champions League. So I guess, you know, maybe that, you know, they're not there yet. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, they are in a tough way. They have some horrific fixtures coming up. They face at Leicester, home at Atlanta, home us, at Spurs. You know, Spurs can still give a game every now and then. And then they have to go away to Atlanta, and then they have home Manchester Derby. So we have ended Jose Mourinho's reign at United. This would be the perfect time to end Ole's reign.
I want him to finish fifth by goal difference.
I want him to be good enough.
We want Ole to be at United for 26 years.
No, they're going to go hire Gary Neville. It'll be even better.
There's a man called Conte out there that scares the bejesus out of me.
Antonio Conte would be good for them because he'd organize them. But I want to.
All right, never mind. I never spoke about this. Let's forget this.
Yeah,
delete the tape.
Yeah. So I do. We are going to now go to my ending question, right? Before we close this off. So put your superhero hats on, right? If you've very clearly Newcastle has been purchased as a sports washing vehicle by the Sovereign Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, despite the fact that the Premier League has received assurances that they will not be run by Saudi Arabia. I do not know how that makes sense. But I want to ask you this one. If you have to think about, from any walk of life, a supervillain to go out and purchase Liverpool Football Club, which one do you take? Scott, we're going to start with you.
Supervillain?
Supervillain.
Are we talking, just people we think in current human beings?
No. This is a fiction. This has to be fictional. I don't want to libel. I'm not libeling anybody.
I think it's
right
sad
now
that we all know that there's supervillains out there in real life.
Yeah, we're
I mean,
we're,
I was going to say, Jeff Bezos is a real life supervillain. I mean,
Mark Zuckerberg is
Hank Scorpio without the beard. I mean, if we're going fictional, I guess Lex Luthor. I mean, I guess you have moments where are you kind of rooting for him, but you think maybe he'll outsmart everybody. I mean, I don't know if there's redeeming qualities, but at least there's something more to it than some of the other ones. So I guess I would say maybe through a certain lens, I think Lex Luthor, you could kind of get behind. Rich guy, tries to outsmart everybody. Maybe that'll bag us a couple trophies.
Yeah. And Kev, how about you?
I mean, super villain. It's got to be somebody with money. So yeah, Lex Luthor's a good shout. Because if he's gonna come, we might as well, win something. Who's rich? Let's think. Kingpin. He's rich. Scrooge McDuck count.
Kingpin kind of looks like Mike Ashley. Maybe that. I don't know if I go that route.
Oh, Dr. Doom. Wasn't he like super, wasn't Dr. Doom like the richest? I don't know. He was worth an absurd amount of money. So let's go with, if I remember my comic book correctly, let's go with Dr. Doom because maybe he'll throw some cash our way and we can build a super squad. But yeah, it's got to be somebody rich, right? It doesn't really matter what their personality's like.
Yeah. And how about you, Mr. Murkoff?
Well, this is a really tough question because I really don't know the evil superheroes. I'm really terrible with comics and supervillains and superheroes. I probably should ask my son for this. But funny thing is just, and maybe hopefully this doesn't get the podcast into hot water, but I actually had a conversation last night with a friend, a big argument about what I consider a real life villain, and that's Elon Musk. So actually, I think if he just showed up, Elon Musk, he just sold off Tesla and he was just, oh, I'm sitting on like, I don't know, $100 billion. And what do I want to do? I'm just going to buy Liverpool and I'm just going to sit at Anfield and just smoke pot all day and just watch, you know, watch the team and then just buy random players. I think that'd actually be quite a hilarious development. I don't know if I'd really enjoy it, but it definitely would be hilarious.
Yeah, and then for me, I think the answer is more of a comical one. I'm going with Dr. Evil, because if we don't win, the war- if we don't win, he will fail to blow up the world.
That's true.
That is funny.
So just quickly, the top six richest supervillains. At number six, Magneto, $500 to $900 million. At number five, Harry Osborn, forgot about that one, from Spider-Man. He's worth $10 billion.
Okay.
Norman Osborn, also worth $10 billion. I don't remember what comic he's from. Oh, Norman Osborn is...
Harry's dead.
Yes.
A lot of Green Goblins.
Yeah, the Green Goblin guys. Kingpin, yeah, I was right. $40 billion. A lot of Spider-Man supervillains got a lot of money. Coming in at number two, Scott's Lex Luthor at $75 billion. And coming in at number one, Dr. Doom, $100 billion. Kev's memory served him well.
It's kind of a sad reflection of what's currently happening, that the way we all answered this was, well, who's just got the most money? Because that's how you win now. Like, there was no, like, real...
That's how you
win. At least Justin kind of had, like, a personality aspect to it, you know, a quirk. Like, hey, maybe this could be funny. And we're just like, no, very serious. If we want somebody to be for Liverpool, we might as well have money. That's how what we need nowadays.
Yeah, they need strategy or... unending cash reserves.
Oh yeah, no. What I'm going for is actually just surrounding the Anfield Road and the visitor section of the Anfield Road end with sharks with freaking laser beams.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah,
but instead of Anfield exercise, so he's probably worth a chunk of change.
Yeah, instead of the Anfield exercise, it'll be Preparation H. Feels pretty good on the whole.
Yeah. All right. I think that takes us to the end of this. So again,
I have two quick updates.
All right,
that I looked up. One is Andrei Voronin. He's currently assistant manager to Dynamo Moscow. Yeah. So I figured
he
really wanted to know what's going on.
I did.
Andrei Voronin.
I miss him.
So that's where he is now. And then Dodgers and Giants, top of the fifth, 0-0. Really exciting. If you love those low-scoring, you know, nail-biting, you know, game five, winner takes all game. That's what's happening right now on TBS. You know, if you guys are interested in watching.
All right. And the Boston Red Sox, FSG's Boston Red Sox are waiting for the Houston Astros.
Tomorrow. American. First game tomorrow.
Bang your trash cans.
All righty.
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys all for joining. And, you know, there's another international break in a month. So maybe we'll see how our predictions went then. But for those of us here on the U.S. Anfield Index podcast, thanks for listening. And we'll be back to you hopefully sooner than this time it took.
Up the Reds.
Up the Reds.
Up the Reds.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this Anfield Index show. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel, so future podcasts find their way to your device automatically. There's nothing quite like fan engagement, and we'd love to know what you think of anything discussed on this show. The best way to get in touch is over on our free Discord community, where both podcasters and listeners debate the hottest LFC topics 24/7. Sign up free now at anfieldindex.com/Discord. You won't regret it. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anfield Index, and find us on Facebook by searching for Anfield Index. Oh, and before you go, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcast app. It only takes a couple of seconds, and it means the world to the people who create these free shows.
Sports Social Podcast Network.